satisfy you. Welcome to Knotcast, episode 364, Pumpkin Spice Puppy.
Yay!
Which I may have used that title before already. It comes from someone referring to a fox as a pumpkin spice puppy.
And it is pumpkin spice season.
It is, yes.
Like, not only has the pumpkin spice Cheerios been out for a little while, I was like, oh, I hope that the pumpkin spice mini wheats will return. And lo, they have. So I bought two boxes today.
You have been blessed.
Yes. Look, I like pumpkin spice stuff. I don't care what people say. It's really good. And by the way, I'm Saverin.
I'm Fuzzwolf.
And we're back. It's just us this week because Shiva is off floating around in space doing stuff. She's off seeing family on the Chakat planet, which I believe is in Virginia. If you're a Chakat, that's your home world. I don't make the rules.
So, wow, a whole planet fits inside Virginia. People don't realize how big Virginia is.
Yeah.
It's sort of like you can fit all of North and South America inside Texas.
That's just crazy how that works.
I know.
So, you have done something, Fuzz. You have actually put segments in.
Yes.
We have, like, an ordered segment list this time.
I realized that a lot of the things I was suggesting that we could talk about, like, actually fell into three or four categories. So I was like, okay, I can actually make a little list here to go by.
Yep.
Then there's other stuff that you want to talk about, too, and we can, like, put those in.
Well, what's cool is that, like, Furry Media, the one thing that I was thinking of bringing
up. We'll fit right in there.
Yep. And that is going to be towards the end, and then we'll have the emails! Emails! Yay! There's a couple this week. So, all right, Fuzz, lead us in with segment number one.
Okay. We don't have to do these in order, but it kind of works. We're going to start with the hot shit, and then go into the furry stuff. So the first section is politics. And we actually have the two politics things that I picked out this week are actually kind of good news. The first one's one that Saverin told me about, and that is that caffeine is now allowed on the BYU campus. So tell us about that, Saverin.
All right, well, Brigham Young University is the largest Mormon school on the planet, I'm pretty sure. And part of Mormon doctrine is that they don't allow caffeine.
Mm-hmm.
And
BYU, it's a drug.
It technically just like is.
Just heroin.
It is addictive, and like I can understand their doctrinal reason for it, but also this is a college,
yeah,
that accepts non-Mormons. I believe why you. I mean, maybe if you're like stuck in the area,
mm-hmm.
You can now get regular Coke, regular Diet Coke, Diet Dr. Pepper with caffeine. It's all free game. You could probably get Mountain Dew.
Whoa. Ooh, that
Provo
might be.
Provo is gonna be lit tonight. All these kids getting.
You might have to like go to confession if you drink Mountain Dew. I mean, because
you know Mountain Dew leads to being a,
like, there's so much caffeine in Mountain Dew that the Mormons will actually have to go to the Catholic Church and confess.
Yeah, I mean, it's just
that big a sin.
Who even knew?
Like, there was, like, a whole conclave, you know, because they're like, okay, all the religions of the world have to make a ruling on it. And when they made the ruling on Mountain Dew, green smoke puffed out from the Vatican roof.
Yes. Mess with the Pope, get the no-scope. That's how it goes.
So the other bit of politics news is actually still pretty positive. There is a school in Australia that wanted to do a charity fundraiser called Do It in a Dress, where they were going to have people show up to their school wearing dresses or casual clothes and basically do activities. And they had a charitable fundraising goal of $900. And it was a fairly small thing, and like no one really noticed it. And then some Australian politician on the conservative side made a tweet about, you know, when will this gender madness end? You know, that kind of thing. And that got people talking, including a prominent Australian comedian then went fuck that and made a $2,000 donation. And that basically started the ball rolling. So long story short, on their goal of $900, they have now raised $175,000. So good for them. We'll have the link in the show notes if you want to read up. That's an interesting thing, actually. You know, there's that old adage about no such thing as bad publicity, which has been really tested lately with a lot of the, you know, the doxing and online ganging up and stuff like that. But in this case, it definitely worked out. So good for those kids.
That is always nice. It's like, hey, look, if we're going to be dicks to these kids and, oh, well, these jerks don't like it, we're going to give them money and help them vastly exceed their goal.
Yes.
That's really about it in terms of the politics things, because obviously we've got the healthcare stuff.
Yeah, call your senators. We could talk about the healthcare stuff. We could talk about Trump's speech at the UN, which was a shit show.
With the fake African country and all the other countries just being like,
I mean, I really hope that he will address our vibranium trade imbalance with Wakanda.
Yeah, man. Because
it's really hurting our shield-making industry.
They really should get, you know, the king of Wakanda out there. But no, he didn't even show up. He didn't even show up. I mean, he slighted for President Trump. I hope that he calls Black Panther, I forget the character's actual name, to the carpet and calls Wakanda. Maybe we'll try to invade Wakanda and we'll see how well that goes. Oh God. And it was just one of those things where he was talking about like, oh, the danger of applied socialism, and like a bunch of people laughed.
Like, oh really? Oh, the socialist countries laughed.
The dangers of like applied socialism with the horrors of universal healthcare and universal education access and all this.
Yeah, and Canada and the European countries are just looking at each other and they laughed and laughed.
We're moving on to books.
Yes.
Because, I mean, look, call your senators. The healthcare shit is really bad. And while we all know it's really fucking bad, there's a lot smarter people with a lot more background of the information.
With a lot more good words.
Yes. They can word way better than us on this exact section. Look at Twitter. I mean, there's lots of people talking about it.
Yep.
But books. Books. We have so many books.
Collect all two.
Oh, man.
So I listed one that I just finished, and I listed one that Saverin had talked about to me. So I'm still reading that big 600-page book, but in the midst of that, I ordered this short anthology that I had seen posted online. There's another furry publisher, they're based down in Houston, called Weasel Press, and they put out an anthology called Passing Through. So it's got, I think it's like six short stories in it, and it's all basically tales from the road, you know, passing through. And it has some really neat stories in it. There was a couple that really popped out to me as very good. And it's a fairly quick read, and it was quite enjoyable. Their website's weaselpress.com. You can order a book there. You can order it from Amazon. I ordered the physical copy because I like print books, but it's also available in Kindle, and I think it's pretty cheap. But I'd say it was definitely worth taking a look at. There's some interesting issues brought up in it, including one which actually goes into something you'll talk about later, kind of gory story about carnivores versus not.
Mm.
And it's like a murder mystery kind of thing. It's
carnivore.
Yeah, it's a pretty good story. So check that out. Now, what are you reading, Saverin?
My book is far less serious, but more comedic, I'm sure. It is called Hark, a Vagrant by Kate Beaton. It is the first hardcover anthology of her comic strip, Hark, a Vagrant. And it is comic strips that poke fun at like historical events and characters and whatnot. And it's been going for quite a long time. And people, I'm sure, have seen it. It's like the, yo, what if the Earth orbits the sun? And the guy's like, yo, Copernicus, what if your wife orbits my dick? You know, and it's stuff. It's very silly stuff like that.
Yeah.
And, like, the cover is Napoleon with a sword, but it's a little toony thing. Mm-hmm. And it's a comic strip book, but it's a nice hardcover that I was able to find for a whole $2 at Goodwill.
Oh, that was when you were telling me about the other day. Okay.
Yeah.
It looks like it's in really good condition, too.
Yeah, again, it's hardcover, super nice, $2 at Goodwill, mm-hmm. which is way better than the usual fare of, like, the world is ending in 1998, and this is why, or 1988, or 1968, or whatever, that those kind of stores sometimes have.
And it is a webcomic, so I put its URL in the notes. It's just harkavagrant.com. It's one word, no dashes or anything.
Yup.
I was just going to look at something. I was wondering when this came out.
And it was funny because my dad saw that. He's the one that found it for me and was like, you'd like this.
Looks like this is the fourth printing, May 2014.
Okay.
So it's a three-year-old book. I don't know how it ended up in random Goodwill then.
Who knows? It was one of those things where, like, my dad, and I think I've told this story before, my dad is now in his early 60s, and he's just become just this voracious reader.
Yeah.
And so he's picked up everything from histories to fiction, and he's really broadened his horizon. He's read every single book Neil Gaiman has written.
That's awesome.
He found an author he liked, and he just went, boom, right down the chain. And I'm like, yeah, you do it, Dad. So I'm trying to get him interested in Anne McCaffrey books, because she, as an author, she and her son, Todd McCaffrey, mm-hmm. have a ridiculously long bibliography.
Yeah.
Dating back to, I think, the late 60s.
Mm-hmm.
And I have read every single one of her Pern books up until the one before she died.
She just died a couple years ago.
She didn't die that long ago.
Yeah.
But her son, Todd McCaffrey, is writing more.
Oh, cool.
So we were out. They'd come to town, and it was like about 4 o'clock. So we're like, look, we're going to hang out with you because fuck trying to get back to Fort Worth in traffic from Dallas. Because that's 45 miles in rush hour traffic. Nah. It's like they're going to spend 2 hours here and then make it an hour drive home rather than spend 2 hours in traffic. Mm. So we went and hit up a bunch of resale shops and whatnot, and I found my dad a bunch of books. Case of the Clockwork Man or whatever. So it's some YA steampunk adventure novel. And he's like, that looks cool. Found a trilogy of books. I forget the titles thereof, but he found a trilogy of books. So he can read all three. And I think it's really cool that my dad has just discovered a love of reading.
Yep.
Keeps the brain active.
Yeah. Reading is a good thing.
Words are good.
Words good. So next segment is fandom news.
Fandom news.
Woo, woo, woo. The first one is just a quick note I made. Furry Invasion is in 2 weeks. That is the new 2-day furry con down in San Antonio.
San Antonio.
It is a 2-day con. It's Saturday and Sunday. It's in a nice hotel on the San Antonio Riverwalk. Which is a really neat location. You've seen it. It's a beautiful area.
Yeah. It's a super...
The river's right there. There's riverboat rides. There's nice restaurants. It's
good bars.
I think it's walking distance from the Alamo. The Alamo's not far away.
So I've been down there a couple times for PAX South.
Mm-hmm.
And like the La Quinta there, which I tend to stay at.
Yeah, yeah.
Is right there next to the little mall there, River Center Mall.
Mm.
But you can go through there. There are food courts at the bottom layer, and then you can walk down on the Riverwalk there. And it's like a quarter mile from the actual convention center.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's literally like a city block across and a city block down, and you're there.
Yeah.
And they have free breakfast and Texas-shaped waffles and all sorts of fun stuff. It's great. So that area is super nice. The mall is doing pretty well last I was there. Mm-hmm. They have lots of food options. And the Alamo is literally right there.
Yeah.
So you can walk around, see all the tourist trappy stuff.
Mm-hmm.
There's a couple of good bars there, like Texas Rose. There's like a couple comic shops right there. And there's some big old like Alamo monuments there as well. It's neat.
Yeah.
And like it's if a lot they're of downtown, cool stuff
down in that area.
Like, so it's one of those, even if the con kind of turns out to be kind of a bust, which I don't think it will be, there's plenty of cool shit to see in downtown San Antonio.
Yeah.
They even have their own, like, San Antonio Tower thing, kind of like the Space Needle, but not as tall.
Oh, okay. I didn't know about that.
Yeah, it's just south of the convention center.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's one of those things where I've seen it and, like, huh, but I've never gone to it.
Yeah.
But, yeah, 2 weeks.
2 weeks.
Yep. So I've got to, like, do a whole...
Gotta get your shit together, son.
Get all my shit together. I'm going down there. Zia's going to fly out to go to that one, too.
Yeah.
Tyrion may or may not join, depending. He's been busy a lot with work and doing overtime lately. Yeah. So we'll see, but I should be there.
My parents wanted to go to it, but they didn't quite get in, so...
The con, it's a first-year con, so I understand it being on the small side. The dealer's room only has, like, 9 dealers.
Yeah, it's super small, and they were just wanting an excuse to go down there, because they haven't been to San Antonio since I was, like, 3.
So they got a dealer's room, they got an artist alley. I mean, we'll be there. Michelle Light got in the artist alley, and that's, like, the only other name I recognize, although Shiva recognized more of the names because she's dealt with a lot of the folks.
She probably would.
By a fiesta, yeah, because, I mean, we're still in Texas, so it's probably...
Yeah.
You know, probably people like me that are like, oh, it's a con in my state, and I'm a dealer here. It's a 5-hour drive.
I hope it turns out good.
The trip is probably going to be kind of a bitch, though, because I don't really have any time off left, so I'm going to work Friday... Drive down there. It's about 5.5 hours. So I'll get down there late Friday, set up Saturday morning, deal Saturday and Sunday, and then immediately hit the road and drive back Sunday.
Yeah, it's a 4.5-hour drive straight south through here, through Austin to San Antonio. But on the upside, there's multiple Buc-ee's on the way.
Oh, man.
One in Temple and one outside of San Antonio.
When I went down there with my sister last October, it took us like 7 or 8 hours because there were accidents and 35 was just torn to shit all the way down. Like, it took us way longer than it should have. So hopefully things go smoother. Actually, what are you doing that weekend?
I'm not sure.
Why don't you come to the con?
I might. I don't think I have anything like absolutely pressing.
Yeah, because, I mean, if Tyrion doesn't come, I'll have room in my car, because Zia's flying in and out.
Yeah, that might be fun.
Yeah.
I like San Antonio.
Yeah, so, you know, that might work out.
I'll keep that in mind.
Yeah. So, the other fandom news, I'm going to throw out the next couple of things, are short announcements, and then we can have a conversation about the second one on the list. Our friend Rama, who folks probably know, some folks may know from he... has been in charge of Reg at Midwest Fur Fest for a long time. He's been in charge of the dealer's room at Method Fur Meet for a long time. He started work heading up the Artist's Alley for Furry Fiesta for the last couple years. Has now been made the chairman of Midwest Fur Fest for 2018. It's very possible that the 2017 con will surpass Anthrocon in attendance.
Yeah, so he's gotten a bit of a...
He bit off a big thing. He may be heading up the largest furry convention in the world.
He's vored more than he can gorge.
So he is stepping down as dealer head for Method Fur Meet. Because, I mean, the head of a department like that does take a lot of time. He's still going to be our Artist Alley guy, because it's not quite as intensive a role.
Yeah,
he mostly handles that on site. He doesn't have, like, meetings and shit like that.
Not to mention, we're, like, right after his con cycle. So
yeah, yeah.
He's still, I mean, con chair, you're always thinking about the next year, but
yeah.
You're not doing so much active work immediately after your con wraps for the year.
So that's a big announcement for him, you know, and he's been very organized and been very involved with cons for a long time. I forgot, not currently, but previously, he was also in charge of dealers for FWA. So he's worked at a lot of cons in different positions, so he's definitely qualified to take that on. The other furry thing, in less positive news... But you can help that. There is a staff member of both FAU and Furthermore. And, you know, I noted her GoFundMe info, but I did actually note her furry name. So she's on Twitter.
Natasha.
Yeah, her actual name's Natasha, which you'll see under her GoFundMe anyway. But she has currently been diagnosed with stage 3 colon cancer, and she's also having a lot of pain because she had some surgery that was supposed to alleviate what they thought was a small thing, and it caused her to get a lot of blood clots in her legs.
And that's bad shit.
And that's really painful, and pain meds aren't helping it, and they wouldn't approve a procedure to remove the blood clots. So, you know, fuck insurance.
Yeah.
And then they did a test on whatever it was they removed, and they're like, oh, no, you're not good after all. It's actually stage 3 colon cancer. And she's going in for additional testing to make sure that that's all it is.
Yeah.
So she's in a precarious situation, obviously. And, of course, can't work while this is going on. She's had surgery. She's in a lot of pain. Medical bills are going to start coming in. So she started a GoFundMe. They only put the limit at, like, $5,000. And it's already gone over $4,000.
Yeah.
Frankly, I think her limit's a little bit low. She might need more than
that. I mean, that's the initial
goal.
She's going to need shitloads more. But, I mean, this is probably just to get – this is the awfulness of our for-profit medical system that the $5,000 that she's seeking to raise will probably cover the tests.
Yeah.
And not much else. So
So we, I saw this show up on Twitter. Actually, it was on Boozy Badger's Twitter feed that I first saw it. So he's been real good in his very active role in the fandom now about, like, retweeting shit for charity and stuff like that. Like, he's raised some money for, like, animal charities and stuff like that. And he got the word out there about this GoFundMe because he had actually met her furthermore. So I'm just like, hey, there's a furry in need. We're spreading the word. Go to the link and donate if you can. Even if you donate, like, $5 or $10, if enough people do it. It adds up, and anything will help out.
Yep.
Now the last thing we'll try not to beleaguer this point too much, but we should at least mention it. I called this section "Furpocalypse Fuck Upalypse."
Yeah.
So this issue. So basically, Furpocalypse is a furry Halloween convention. So it's held every year around Halloween up in the state of Connecticut. They have between 1,500 and 2,000 people. It's the successor convention to Furfright. Last year, I think it was, they started to have a theme beyond just Halloween convention.
Spooky.
Yeah. So this year's theme is Haunted Asylum, which wasn't too bad. And then they announced their registration levels, where it's like you have supporting, attending, sponsored, super sponsor. But they named them stuff like
patient, and orderly, electroshock technician
and lobotomist. When this first hit, when it was first announced last year, it was like right after the heat, right during the heat of the election. And, you know, Mike Pence, the current vice president at the time, the nominee, is a proponent of gay conversion therapy, which involves electroshock therapy. And especially in the South and in conservative areas of the country, there are a lot of gay people that have gone through conversion therapy and been electroshocked to try to make them not gay. It doesn't work, yeah. As we talked about before, the furry community is a very gay fandom. I mean, it's very queer. Lots of LGBT people. And even those that aren't are generally supportive of LGBT people. I don't think this was of malicious intent on Furpocalypse's part. I think it was just a blind spot that a bunch of people were like, oh, spooky asylum, we'll do this, this looks fine, no one will have a problem with it. And like, I've seen big companies like put out horrible advertising, right? And yeah, you've been like, every company should just hire a couple of 12-year-old boys to run their ideas by, and if it's some sort of horrible sexual innuendo and they giggle, then you know not to go with that ad. And so I think this was just a thing that, like, nobody on the con staff noticed. But, and that's fine. It's okay to fuck up. It's what you do after you fuck up that counts. So people raised this as a concern last year. The concerns were ignored. Con never acknowledged it.
We talked about it in May of this year.
Mm-hmm. And this month, someone who'd been a little little bit aggressively tweeting at them. Someone who had been to like every Fur Fright and every Furpocalypse and was a local basically said, change your horrible fucking theme. And they blocked him on Twitter and they banned him from the con and they refunded him his $40. And that was the point where people were like, okay, what the fuck are you doing?
It's like, hey, could you fucking not, please?
So first they released a statement that was basically like, we're sorry you were offended, which is a bullshit non-apology. A
really bad way to do it.
Yeah, and they're like, this guy was, certain people are being aggressive to us, and we have to make sure our attendees are safe. This guy literally said that. This guy was not threatening violence or disruption of any kind. And so, of course, the criticism went on, and they made another statement today that says, like, okay, if you want, you can get a blank badge, but you can still get the themed badges if you want. The positive thing they did was they unbanned the guy. So if he feels like registering and going to the fucking con at this point, he's free to do so. I don't know if I would at that point, if I was that person.
No.
Me, it doesn't affect me either way. They're in Connecticut. I'm in Texas. It's not a con I've ever been to. I'd only been to their predecessor once back in 04. So this doesn't affect me either way. But I'm just looking at it from like a kind of a PR perspective where I was like, y'all need to like do some reviewing of how you handle your PR shit.
Oh, yeah. And not only that, your theming and stuff like that is really important because this could have been fixed real simple. You could have said, ah, we fucked up, mm-hmm. and swapped. You could have swapped the names around, as Boozy put it out. I think it was Boozy that was like,
yeah,
make it nurse, doctor, you know, instead yeah. of
nurse, doctor, patient, orderly, done. Yeah,
there,
boom. I mean, you're still saying you're a mental patient in a haunted asylum, but, I mean, that's not quite as ableist as lobotomist and electroshock technician.
Well, especially if you guys look into the history of lobotomy as a just...
Especially having just watched season 4 of BoJack Horseman, where it comes up in that.
Oh, no.
Yeah, and like a really creepy
the
way.
Actual, the procedure and its history and its use on just the undesirables, where it just basically murders you but leaves your flesh puppet alive.
Yeah.
Like, it's super fucked up. And yes, it's a horror-themed convention, but you're also looking at maybe, you know, there's kind of a reason that asylum horror films are slightly out of vogue. Because it's one of those, yeah, actually, maybe let's not talk about something that was going on until, like, the 80s.
Yeah.
Because there are people alive that had this happen to them against their will.
You know, and there are other scary negative things that have happened in history.
Panther's Home.
That we don't make con themes of.
Yeah.
You know?
This the con theme, Holodomor, you'll be hungry for more, you know? The Irish Potato Famine.
The Trail of Tears.
Yeah. These are not good convention themes. Do not use them.
Not at all.
We really should think about it. And doggedly hanging on to a theme like that just galvanizes people.
Yeah.
And you've got vendors that are like, you know what? Actually, I'm never going to come to your con. And you got people like, herder, stick it to the SJWs, which you're attracting the wrong kind of people to your convention.
Right, yeah.
And so, you know, you've poisoned the well for no gain. Like, yeah, it's way the fuck up in Connecticut. Odds are I would never end up going there anyway.
Well, it's in our community. It's worth talking about.
Yeah, no, I mean, in terms of like, even though I would probably never go there, it's kind of marked it off the list.
Yeah.
Like, if I was in that area for whatever reason at the tail end of October, it's actually over my con's weekend this year.
Yeah. So you can't go for other reasons.
Well, yeah. I'll be free next year.
Right.
But it's just one of those things where these guys, we have such a plethora of options as a fandom right now,
mm-hmm.
that we can pick and choose whatever con we want to go to pretty much.
Yeah.
Vote with your wallets.
And you know,
that's the way it works.
I'm pretty sure at some point in the future, there's every possibility that Furry Fiesta will fuck up in some way.
Oh,
and I can only hope that the staff like responds to the situation in a positive manner and like basically it's accept responsibility, make a sincere apology, make the changes that you need to change, and move on.
Yeah,
and put on a good show for everybody.
we're doing Alice or Texas Wonderland as our theme this year for mm-hmm. Fiesta.
Yeah.
So it's Alice in Wonderland plus Texana, which sounds like a pretty cool thing. Like, I think if we get some neat fan art of the Jackalope OC Jack as with the Mad Hatter
like
costume.
Like a Mad Hatter thing, yeah.
That'd be pretty cool.
Yeah.
But that shouldn't piss anybody off. And we don't have, like, tiers of badges that are, like, themed necessarily.
I mean, not that that's a terrible idea to do.
No, I'm just saying, it's like, it's one of those things where you have your themes. We go through such a rigorous, like, tournament of champions when it comes to themes.
Yeah.
The way it's handled within Fiesta. We literally get all these themes submitted, and then we literally do brackets.
Mm-hmm.
Based voting. And so, you know, it literally is like Tournament of Champions, and so it's very unlikely that either of the final two themes are going to be ones that'll piss people off, because we have so many different eyes involved in the process.
Yeah, that's true. You got 120-odd people, 140 people
yeah.
eligible to vote on it. Hopefully, if there's any major issues, the chair and the board could step in and be like, ah, you know what, that's an old-timey racist thing, so let's take that out of the running.
Yeah, it's like, wait, how did Minstrel Show end up as one of the quarterfinalists?
Yeah, is anything like that.
Yeah, thankfully that's never kind of come up. So people, vote with your wallets and vote with your feet. You know, let conventions know that if they do something like this, that their theming is something slightly less kosher and makes you uncomfortable. Let them know, and more often than not, I would hope, most conventions are at least willing to entertain criticism.
Yeah.
And not block you on Twitter over it.
Yeah. It seems a little silly.
That pretty much covers our furry political stuff, furry politics stuff. So we are going to move on to our furry media. BoJack Horseman has been renewed for a fifth season.
Woohoo!
So, Depression Horse.
Are you ever going to get around to watching the first season?
I have not even started it.
It's really good.
I know. I'm sure it's very
season
popular.
Season one takes a few episodes to warm up, and then it suddenly takes a turn, and you're like, fuck me, I did not see this sudden dramatic plot coming. And then it's just one gut punch after another for 3.5 seasons, and I love it.
Oh.
It's so weird to explain it like that, but yeah, so sorry. Side quest here is me gushing about how awesome BoJack Horseman is. It's just really well written. The characters are all really real. They're all super well developed, and I've probably mentioned this before. I've seen other people write articles on it, how it's like one of the only shows on television that really addresses mental illness and depression and the issues that come with that, and the issues of thinking that you're a really shitty person and wanting to do better and failing at it, and how that makes you feel and how that affects your relationships with everybody around you. And it's a really amazing show. And, you know, and then on the other hand, you know, it's part furry, part human. You have these anthro animals in it. It's full of terrible animal puns and lots of background humor. Like, part of the reason, like, I want to go back and rewatch it all is that there's always, like, shit going on in the background. Or a sign on a building or a store name or something like that is some kind of funny reference to something. So it's a very layered show. And if you're not already watching it, I highly recommend going and checking it out. So yeah, I'm very happy to hear it's been renewed for another season. It's actually one of the really big shows on Netflix, so I would have been surprised if they hadn't renewed it. And I guess what really surprised me is that season four came out and you're like, okay, how long can Netflix keep putting out a really good show? Like, I mean, it's got to be so hard and so time consuming to write really solid episodes and then get them animated. So it's like, I hope it's still good. And season four is just fucking whoa. It's really
one of the nice things about Netflix is that they have production deadlines, mm-hmm. but they don't have to air an episode every week.
Yeah.
So they, like, order things. Like, they order the new season well, they announced the new season. Well, they probably ordered the new season 6 months ago. And the new season will come out next year at some point, probably. Yeah. So they're already at work writing.
Oh, I'm sure they're already well into writing it. I mean, we've just found out that season 5 is happening. I'm sure they're already writing it.
Oh, yeah. I know for, like, in the case of My Little Pony, like, sometimes they've got stuff written, like, 2 years out.
Yes, you talk about the happy horse show, and I'll talk about the sad horse show.
God, the most recent horse episode I watched, I think I haven't watched the last 2 weeks worth of horse. I've been doing stuff on Saturday mornings and or sleeping in.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. Yeah, the most recent one. I was just amused at the dichotomy of we have our two horse shows.
The two horse shows. The happy horse show and the sad horse show.
They are very different.
Very vastly different. Though this last week was like Rarity positively dealing with a minor personal emergency. Like she accidentally gets Nair on her mane and loses some of it. So she decides to roll with it and goes punk and dresses up in punk garb. She has like a green and yellow mohawk. And
oh my god, so that actually happened. I saw like a...
You saw some fan art.
I saw some fan art, yeah, of like punk Rarity, and I didn't know how seriously to take
it. No, she did that in the episode, apparently. I haven't watched it.
Huh.
It was funny because I saw a tweet from Sethisto. Mm-hmm. The Equestria Daily has an app that gets, you know, has reviews, like an Android app, and it basically it's the website's phone app.
Right.
And there it got a 1-star review. Please remove this unchristian image of Rarity so that my children can continue to use the app.
Unchristian.
Yeah, she's got like a leather jacket and shorts on and like fishnets. Like she doesn't normally wear clothes, but by wearing punky clothes to complement her punky hairdo. That is unchristian.
Yeah.
So there's that. So you saw the trailer for Peter Rabbit.
I did, yes.
I've only seen screen caps. So, enlighten me.
I mean, Peter Rabbit, obviously, is a very old children's story.
Beatrix Potter.
Yep.
Written many, 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 many years ago.
It's a classic. I know the actor's name is James Corden, and I know his name. I don't know what he's been in. I think he's been in comedies.
Let's see. 1902.
Oh, wow.
And written 5 more books between 1904 and 1912. Thanks, Wikipedia.
So, yeah, it's a pretty old story. So it's getting a CGI animated movie. The character designs look really good. Now, the person that was tweeting about it was saying that they think the plot's going to suck. And, I mean, yeah, it might be some kind of groan-worthy humor or something. I'm not really going to judge it till I see it. I mean, I have a very low bar, usually, when it comes to furry movies. If the characters look good, I'll watch it. I'll at least give it a shot. But the animation looks really smooth. People are like, and I was like, oh, there's a badger in it, and the badger looks really snazzy and stuff like that. And there is this funny scene where like they're having a big party at this house because the human's out at the moment, and Peter Rabbit encounters this fox. He's like, hey. Aren't you that fox that tried to eat me last week? He's like, go like this, make her grin. And he kind of growls, and the fox goes, rawr, and like just teeth. So people are like, oh, there's some Vore fan was working on this trailer. It's like, speaking of Vore, which you'll go into later.
We'll be getting into more Vore.
There's also another furry movie is a stop-motion animation movie directed by Wes Anderson, who I think Wes Anderson did Fantastic Mr. Fox.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, and this is in a very similar style to that. It's called Isle of Dogs. So it takes place in Japan, mostly in an island off the coast of Japan. And there was the story concept in the trailer is that there was some sort of plague that was being spread among dogs. So they took all the dogs and they dumped them on the garbage island that's off the coast of the country. That's why it's called Isle of Dogs. And this one kid really wants his dog back. So he puts on like a, he's like a 10 or 12 year old kid supposed to be. He puts on like a pilot outfit and like gets this rickety old plane and flies over to the island to find his dog Spots. And what's funny is the human character speaks Japanese, but watching it, all the dog characters are speaking English. And one of the dogs actually says something like, boy, I wish we could understand his language. So it's going to be really neat, like, watching the movie, being able to understand the dogs and having this human character there, and as his English speakers, not be able to understand him. It'll be kind of neat. But it looks neat. Stop motion's not always my thing, but the characters do look kind of cool, and it seems like a neat story. So these two are less anthropomorphic and more like in the Watership Down kind of vein of like four-footed feral style animals that can talk to each other and understand each other, as opposed to Zootopia style walking on their hind legs wearing clothes.
Yeah, I mean, which is what Peter Rabbit looks like. It is
Peter Rabbit is like
the humanoid, vague, like sort of Zootopia ish.
It's almost somewhere in the middle, because Peter Rabbit exists in a world with humans. There's actually a human in
weird
in the movie. Yeah,
are they CG humans or human humans?
CG, thank
God. Oh dear.
No, I think that's better. Than having a human actor interact with CG animals.
And, yeah, we've still never gotten that down.
Yeah, I think it's one of those worlds where, like, when the humans are around, all the animals are just supposed to look and act like animals, like a Toy Story, you know?
Yeah.
But when they're not around, they're all wearing clothes and talking to each other and shit. So
there's that. My furry thing.
Yes.
Let's talk about a cool furry dude.
Okay.
So let's talk about Sonic Fox. Sonic Fox. He's a fighting game dude.
I hear he's the fastest thing alive.
Possibly. He's also an incredibly visible, incredibly skilled and talented fighting game player who's won like $300,000 in his career so far.
Yeah.
And he's in his very early 20s.
Mm-hmm.
So he's a super visible black furry who is... He actually on Disney XD, because Waypoint TV did a documentary of people at EVO, the big fighting game tournament.
Yeah.
And he won, I think, MKX and Injustice 2. Like, he's won multiple times, and, like, he's the record holder for, like...
Yeah, I saw a picture of him on Twitter. He was holding, like, his Guinness World Record plaque. Apparently he has several of them now.
Yeah, and so that's super cool. So we're talking about the furries that are going mainstream, like... Far from being dead, furries are fucking everywhere, kids.
Yeah, yeah.
I was at Target earlier today, and I got my pumpkin spice mini wheats. Hell yeah. And they've got the fursuit heads, and they had fox and cat and unicorn and something else. And they have paws and tails and ears in the bins below it. We've got furries winning hundreds of thousands of dollars playing video games. We got furries interacting with major brands, selling them their delightful recipe for candy corn pizza. DiGiorno says, "'Tis the no." He's like, "Yo, you want the recipe? I'm giving it away for free."
I love that, like, the guy's at is the real asshole.
So yeah.
DiGiorno's tweet is, "At the real asshole." It's like, yeah. Jesus.
And so we've got all these... And then, of course, in that thread, you've got all these people like, "Yo, is this a cult? Can I have a fursona?" And lots of furries like, "Hey kid, you want a fursona? First one's free." It's like we're inducting the normies into the fringes of our fandom.
Just imagine some creepy furry artist opening up their trench coat and there's a bunch of badges hanging from the inside.
"Hey kid, you want one?" Well, no, it's just you get Mary Mouse and she's got her certified.
Oh, yes.
"Which one you want, kid?"
Right.
"You'll be certified."
Oh, my God.
"That'll be your fursona."
You need like three trench coats for the number of badges she's got.
Yeah, she's varied. She's like... Yeah, or like, no, she has like the generic ones, or it's like, "But if you want something more specific, see me at my table and I'll trade you in."
Yeah.
So she's got a trench coat just absolutely full, but she's got three times as many at her table.
Yeah, yeah, the good shit's behind the table.
Yeah, man. "Oh, that one says fox. You want Finnick? I got that shit. Oh, you got a wolf? You want a maned wolf? Little spider wolves, man? We got that shit."
She should do a maned wolf one that's just really long.
Yes, yes, she should. It's like comically long.
Yes, yes. It's like 3 inches wide, 24 inches long. Just hangs down to your fucking knees.
And so...
Speaking of Vore from earlier.
Yes. Tooth and Tail is out.
Uh-huh.
It's the Furry Russian Revolution.
Wait, it's a communist furry game? Did Dio write this?
Well, she would probably side with the commoners in this one for certain.
So I had a question for you when you were telling me about this earlier. Was this created by furries into fandom, or is it just a mainstream game that happens to have furries in it?
I think it's the latter, okay. But the art is super furry.
Right, right.
Not like, think Zootopia style.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Furries, not like anthro, you know, animal head people, but
yeah, yeah.
Think Zootopia furries. And the game is set in a world where vor is a thing, where mm-hmm. like they could take your children and they will be eaten kind of shit. And like it starts out where the leader of this sort of bourgeois, the long coats, his son is taken, killed, and eaten. And he's leading a revolution because fuck that noise. This is fucked up. Don't eat my kids. And so you have that, and then you have the street people who are like the really the poor people,
mm-hmm.
the proletariat, and they are fighting because they're the ones that are being preyed upon by the government secret police, which is a faction, and the quote unquote civilized, which are the ruling class nobles faction.
Mm-hmm.
And the game is super heavy into the vor theme, in that when the like in multiplayer, the losing side is presented as like crying, whatever. And then it just says, like, the winning faction will feast tonight. And then it shows you, like, the in-game charts, and it charts, like, your APM, your income, your units lost kind of thing. And it shows...
Your units? Like that's people, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Your soldier...
Your worker units.
Your worker units, your soldiers, whatever, lost. And then at the victory...
I've eaten so much productivity hours this week.
The victory scene is... The color shifted, like they're wearing the colors of the winning faction,
yeah.
All like chowing down on mystery legs of meat.
Oh, God.
And like it's a controller-based, console-friendly, light RTS that has randomly generated maps in most cases and victory conditions of basically killing another faction and destroying their grain silos, their farms, their means of production. You must seize their means of production. It's a vor-based, furry-ass... console RTS that's on Steam and console.
It's a vor-based instead of turn-based or role-based or whatever yes. other.
Like, basic worker units are drunken squirrels with pistols. You got lizard boys mm-hmm. with throwing spears. You've got birds with guns strapped to them. You have a bomber owl that drops mice onto the battlefield.
Is it an eagle with guns strapped
There's an eagle with guns strapped to it.
America, fuck yeah.
They got there's stealth units, which are chameleons with clubs. They sneak around invisible and knock out enemy units. There are worker
it's
moles.
It's called a baton. What do you do with it? We club people with it.
Yeah. There's worker moles.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there is a hero character, which is a sniper fox lady. And so there's lots of good character designs,
mm-hmm.
and the art's really solid, and it has a very dark theme.
Yeah.
And it's set during, like, the Russian Revolution-ish
mm-hmm.
times. It's this super furry game all about vor that just came out. And I'm like, I should check this out.
Buy it on Steam, or is
yeah,
it
I think it's
Steam?
Only, like, 20 okay. bucks.
Nice.
Because it just came out, but it's like this indie-ass game.
So this actually reminds me of a comic I picked up at Mephit this year. The cover art looked interesting, so I picked it up. And the tagline in the top and the title, it's dreadful. Tear and cringed when I showed it. They're squirrels. They're warriors. Squarriors.
Okay.
It's the name of the book.
So... I'm just going to read you the quick description okay. from Wikipedia.
About all right,
this.
Then I'll tell you about Squarriors.
Tooth and tail. The game takes place in a society in which a nation of anthropomorphic animals, described by multiple sources as being akin to those in the Redwall series, faces a chronic food shortage. The system by which animals are selected for slaughter to feed the populace is broken down, and the four factions fight to decide who will be eaten. The art style and weaponry of the game are described as being akin to the Enlightenment and Industrial Revolution.
Akin to.
Words, English. And let's see, where is it on Steam? But yeah, I saw rumblings about this and people going, oh, this is furry, and then like, ah, this is vor. It's like, okay, kids, get excited because it's gonna be weird.
So we have a new plushie in our house.
Uh-huh.
It's this cute little rabbit plush that was a door prize at the vor party.
Oh no.
And Ajax had like just sort of peeked in, and he's like, so I rescued him, but he's like, I had to give him a food name. So his name's Toffee because he's like this sort of light brown color. Uh-huh. So that's the new member of our family. It's Toffee the Bunny.
So it is $20. They can buy a bundle with Monaco, or you can buy it with the soundtrack for $25. And its current rating is very positive.
Good, good.
88% of the 488 reviews. So lead the revolution with an army of flame-throwing boars, mustard gas-lobbing skunks, and paratrooper-puking owls. Tooth and Tail is a real-time strategy game featuring single-player online competitive play, etc., etc. Build a base, lead your army, eat your foes.
Nice. And so pick up Squarriors for more in that vein.
I just one of those things where it's like, welcome to the mainstream. Our furry, weird furry shit is getting out there.
Yeah.
We've got all these mainstream furries and a game about war.
There's also furry, like, fetishes that I thought were furry things. Where, like, people are like, I'm really into this thing. And I was like, huh, that's weird. But, okay, whatever. And then I see it outside of furry, and I'm like, yeah, wait, like, that's not just a furry thing?
Wait, that's ours. Wait a sec.
Like I actually was reading an article on the Alien movies, and, you know, they referred to the facehugger things part as an ovipositor. And I was like, I thought that was a word that furries made up for putting eggs in your butt. Nope. But apparently it's not. It's a real world. It's a legit word. Outside the fandom.
Too. With facehuggers, that goes straight into prey kill, and that's not cool.
Because it kills your prey?
Yeah.
Okay.
Anyways.
I hadn't heard that as a term.
It's like hardvore, gore.
Oh, stuff. Okay. I see.
It's on my blacklist on E621.
Oh, okay.
It's like, I don't want to see this.
You don't want to see any prey kill. That makes sense.
My list is getting fairly long.
Mm-hmm.
I was just like, you're scrolling through, and you're like, what the fuck?
Mm-hmm.
Wait, look at tags. What did this miss? How did I miss this?
That sounds like me reading Twitter.
It's like, oh
God, what the fuck?
Get that out of there. No.
Speaking of which, Dogpatch Press made a big article and linked the alt furry block list. So, and apparently so many people used it, like it exceeded Dropbox's bandwidth. Okay, what has got you?
That's a sexy monster, Ben. Can you handle your new fans? So this is kind of goes back to politics kind of thing. So Ben Garrison, writer of possibly the dumbest political cartoons on the planet. It's like in 1947, Truman created the CIA, and he's walking the CIA, and it's his little puppy. In 1963, heel, the CIA, it's tugging him along, tugging JFK along, and it's sort of implied that they killed JFK.
Mm-hmm.
Because, JFK was shot 357 times from 622 angles.
Right.
And then now it's showing the CIA as this giant wolf with a big spike collar leading the United States on the leash. And it's saying, good boy. And so people are like, Ben, I just want you to know I'm going to draw the CIA as a sexy werewolf and there's nothing you can do to stop me. Hey, GurGraphics and Snowden, what's your persona? Mr. Gellison, do you take commissions? Ooh, I love big, scary monsters. I wish I was being walked by a big, nice wolf. Oh. So, I'm just like, there's going to be R34 of Ben Garrison's dumbass political cartoons.
His anthropomorphic CIA.
Yeah, his giant anthro CIA fucking Uncle. I like, that wolf is going to be fucking Uncle Sam in the butt. You just wait. I am speaking it into the universe and making it real by saying it. There is going to be CIA wolf fucking Uncle Sam in the ass and dragging him along.
It could be so much hotter if he didn't have such a icky style.
Yeah,
well, I mean, it's a political.
He's a dumbass political hack, not a furry artist.
Right? Like, yeah, we can make this hotter.
We can make this.
We have
hotter.
To make it hotter.
So I want you guys to find me sexy CIA werewolf fucking Uncle Sam by next week. Chop. God. All right. So we are coming up. We have hit the end of our topics, and suddenly Adam has appeared.
Hello, little doggo.
He's like, hi, yes. I want attention.
Yes, you do. Ow, you're scraping my nipples.
He's like, it's all right. You don't need those.
You don't make milk. So Saverin and I ate at Dickie's Barbecue before we started recording, and Adam has been relentlessly sniffing our hands because of the barbecue smell.
Oh, yeah. And further, like, I got some beard oil the other day, and he got, like, all up in my face and started licking it. I'm like, no, dog, stop. Ah! Thankfully, it's all, like, it's like some vegetable oils and stuff. It's not going to harm him. But he was just like, ooh, what's this? Lick, lick, lick. It's like, dog, you just licked this stuff off my face. That's not good. And now he is sitting and waiting and guarding.
You may not notice, but Saverin's dog is actually microscopic, and you need to hold a magnifying glass to see him.
Yep.
And pet him very carefully.
Yep. And, you know, one day, I fear we may lose him in a peanut butter jar, and that'll be the end. I'll be very sad.
Aww.
Now he's just sitting at our feet.
Yeah.
Wanting attention.
Well, for like the first half hour of the show, like I'm sitting here and I just felt this little lump at my leg. And I looked down like, oh, it's Adam just chilling there sitting by my feet.
Well, Panther's in the front room. And so he's probably gotten attention from Panther and is now coming in here saying, it's your turn.
Right. Yeah.
So we're going to stop and save real quick. And then we're going to get on to the few emails we have.
Oh, right.
Because we do that occasionally still. Wow. Yes. BRB. And we're back. Had to stop and pet the dog and look at some cool phones that Panther's purchased.
Ow.
And Adam is clawing at Fuzz with his little talons.
Put your little paws down and I'll pet your head.
He's like, no, you must pay attention to me. I need to trim his nails again.
No pet, only claws.
Yeah. He's very good at letting you know when he needs to go out because he'll be like, yo, claw, 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 claw. I need to go potty, which... After this, we're finished recording, I will do so.
Look at his floppy little ears.
He's super cute. Ah! All right, so this is the email segment of the show, and you can write in to us.
Doggo status cute.
Yes, doggo status cute. And he is going to sit there and be petted by Fuzz. He's flopped onto his side. He is laying across Fuzz's foot and licking at his hand, because that's what he does. You can email us at notcast@foxzephyrs.com. You can send us anonymous asks via our Tumblr, notcast.tumblr.com. And let's go to the email box. This last one we have is, the first one we have this week is actually kind of old. It's from the 17th. So it was, the 8th, not the 17th. Ha ha! Anyways.
The year is 17.
The year is 17. So this one is a recentish furry convention review time.
Yay.
Yay. So, Marf, greetings, canines, and honorary feline. I believe you asked for furry migration reviews, yes? I guess I should stop procrastinating and contribute something to y'all sometime. And then we procrastinated on him. We are the worst. I was persuaded by a couple of friends to see them at Furry Migration. I had no reason to go, and honestly, I never in my life expected to fly 4 hours to Minneapolis, let alone for a weekend to be an animal in a hotel. That being said, I haven't seen these friends in a long time, and the urge to go somewhere new seemed was strong, so off I went to plan and book. Long story short, I was pleasantly surprised. Furry Migration, as far as cons go, is fairly small, and you can easily loop around the space, seeing the same people in less than an hour. Considering my past two conventions, BLFC and Anthrocon, were among the largest, this was a nice break and in fact felt more like a mini-vacation. Major highlights include trying out a furry-themed escape room run by Fuzzy Logic, seriously, check them out, the fun-sized low-key parties, including a wine and beer tasting, as well as a pun-filled party next door, a surprisingly well-done British pub in the middle of America, of all places. A panel on proper Twitter practices and the effects of perceived popularity on one's psyche, run by Path. Actual weather, relative to a native Californian. A giant mall with an amusement park inside. So I'm going to guess it was near the Mall of America.
Mm-hmm.
Getting a surprise first-class upgrade to and from the con.
Nice.
And actually meeting friends that I've only seen online before and getting to spend time and socialize with them. Seriously, this is the one thing I love about smaller conventions. They feel so much more mellow and special in relation, and bring back more of that first con feeling. Overall, this con was a much-needed break, and I'm grateful to have been able to go. I might, maybe, possibly, perhaps go back next year, or see about doing more cons of similar size due to the increased social factor. Cheers, and stay naughty, Mike Fulf. So that's good. That Yay. Sounds like a fun, small convention for folks up north.
We have a brief update on the Coke Zero Sugar. Dee has finally found a box of suitable size and should be mailing the Coke Zero Sugar soon.
Yay! So we'll have an international bottle of Coke Zero Sugar so we can find out how those in Canada taste the Coke Zero Sugar.
Indeed.
Meanwhile, I'm just like, well, they still have Cherry Coke Zero, and it was on sale at Kroger, so I like bought 5 bottles.
Nice.
And then it's off sale, and all the Coke Zero is gone, and it's called Coke Zero Sugar, except for the cherry. Mm. And cherry vanilla Coke Zero in cans. Like, there's still a few varieties of Coke Zero that are the more random, less common varieties that they put out there that are only mm-hmm. present at, like, grocery stores.
Like the ham and pineapple Coke Zero.
Yeah, you know, and the Blood of the Innocent Coke Zero. It's the special Halloween edition.
Right, yeah. Like,
you know, a curse in every can.
You open the can and it screams.
Yeah, it's super hard to get, but, you know, 'tis the season, right?
Oh, totally. Pumpkin Spice Coke Zero.
All right, so do you want to read this email?
Last episode. Well, actually, it's not going to be the last episode ever, because neither's this one. Good evening, Notcast. In regards to episode 363, I have a few questions for you. Strokes goatee. First, I'm a white male for Western Canada, and I'm all for immigration. However, illegal immigration is just that. Illegal! With DACA, if it affects more than the innocents who were brought over, like the family you mentioned, then how can the government reward those who broke the law and not further encourage further illegal immigration? But it doesn't, though. DACA specifically is only for the people that were brought over as children. What do you believe should be changed to make legal immigration easier? Given many undocumented immigrants are those who overstayed work or vacation visas, should they not rightfully be deported? Not be rightfully deported, sorry. By crossing the border illegally or overstaying a visa, are they not breaking the law? Why should they get special exemption? I ask these as someone who leans to Canadian left politically. I live in a country with a rich immigrant history, but also enforces immigration laws. Love the show, Whisper. So here's the thing. I don't know how Canadian immigration law compares to American immigration law. The only parts of it I've heard are that you have to hit, like, a certain number of points and it'll only take qualified applicants. Like, if you're just some random dumbass, they won't let you in. But if you're, like, a doctor or a computer scientist or something like that, you have a marketable skill that can add to their economy, they'll let you in. That's about all I know about Canada's immigration system. I don't know more in and outs than that. I do know that they do take in some refugees, but that's kind of a different story. The thing about the United States legal immigration is it is a complete fucking mess. The average length of time, if I recall correctly, if you immigrate and you do everything right, and you don't have an administration that is just bound and determined to kick people out no matter what, it takes like 18 years to go from the beginning of the process to getting your green card and then getting citizenship if you want to get citizenship.
And this is if you dot the I's, cross the T's, don't fuck up any step along the way.
Yeah, that's not counting people like me, who I came in as a child because my mother married an American citizen. And since he was military and they did background checks on all of us, we got into the country with green cards because of that. So I got my green card as an 8-year-old and I didn't have to do anything for it. And that makes me a very privileged individual as far as immigrants living in the United States are concerned. But that my experience is not the average experience.
Yeah.
The other thing is a lot of people that immigrate, that come into the United States, they're fleeing from really shitty situations. And not even talking Mexico, where like we do get a lot of immigrants from Mexico that are like they're running away from the drug cartels and the drug wars and stuff like that around some of the border towns. But a good portion of immigrants from actually come up from South America and pass through Mexico to get to the United States. And they're from countries that are significantly less stable mm-hmm. than Mexico is, and that they're under threat. And we also get a lot of people that either come in from Canada or they come in from sea.
Yeah.
And people like try to make it
folks from Southeast Asia. That's why the
wall's not going to work.
Yeah.
You know, they try to make it sound like all our illegal immigrants are coming in from Mexico, so let's build this wall, and that's not the case at all. But that doesn't really answer his point. What I don't know all the particular laws involved with this, but humanitarian perspective, it's wrong to deport people to countries where their lives could be at stake. Like, this has been an issue with Britain kicking people back to the Middle East, particularly kicking gay people back to a Middle Eastern country where being gay is an executable offense. We've had that same situation here.
Yep.
And, you know, just because it's a law doesn't mean that it's morally right. And there's some famous quote by a politician, I think it was Jefferson, about if a law is immoral, then you have a duty to disobey it.
Yeah. And when it comes to the Dreamers, the DASA people, mm-hmm. these people have brought into our country through no fault of their own, and the only compassionate response is to amnesty and make them legal aliens, because there's no reason not to. Like, yeah. There is literally no reason that these people should be punished for the sins of their parents, who they may still be in the country. Mm-hmm. I don't know. They might be dead. I don't know. But these kids who were brought in by their parents at very young ages, they've built lives here. They are super law-abiding citizens. They're contributing to our economy. They are doing everything and even playing by the government's rules in this case. They gave the government their information that our citrus golem is going to try to betray. So the only compassionate and ethical choice for these people is to make them legal resident aliens and give them a path of citizenship, because to do otherwise is to betray your humanity, I feel. Mm-hmm. Like, and you're like, well, what about all the other people? Well, we're not talking about all the other people. We're talking about these 800,000 folks here in the U.S. who are playing by the rules, not breaking the law, have wives and kids and families and jobs, and contribute to their economies and everything else.
But to talk about the other people.
And, like, our system's super fucked, and it's super heavily biased.
Very fucked, yeah. And
towards, like, European folk.
And there are people here that have lived here a long time. And, you know, I actually know, like, I know of, through family members, a British couple that came over here on holiday in the 80s and just stayed. And to me, like, that would terrify me. Like, you know, every time you have to go to the hospital, or every time you might get pulled over or something like that, just constantly having to, like, lie about who you are and know that you're not there legally. I mean, now that would, like, weigh on my mind constantly. So I'd never do something like that. If you're in a really bad situation, though, you know, if you're coming up from some drug-addled town or some heavily homophobic area and your life is at stake or something like that, then moving to a more civil country, even though this one's not perfect, it would definitely...
I mean, it's all relative, you know?
Yeah, it's definitely all relative, you know?
Like, I wouldn't go to Arizona.
Personally, if I was immigrating north, I'd just keep fucking going to Canada.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I mean, it's hardly perfect.
But you have to sort of be open to shades of gray. It's not all black and white. You can't just be like, well, the law says you're here illegally, so get the fuck out. You know, I don't want the law to just be like robots with no human emotion or compassion or anything like that. This is why, like, things like how many people that are in jail for drug-related offenses, like, that's fucking stupid.
Yeah, it's for-profit prisons.
Yeah,
profiting
the concept of jail is that it's supposed to rehabilitate people and release them back into society after they've served their time. And that's not what happened. You go to jail and it's hell on earth. And we have all these people in there for nonviolent drug offenses because they sold a fucking dime bag to somebody that was undercover, you know, and now they're in jail for 15 years. It's fucking ridiculous. A lot of the laws, if you just go by the book, are completely insane in this country. In a lot of countries, probably, but I'm most versed in this one. Shit needs to change. And if you're basing your morals solely on what's legal, I don't know what to tell you. That seems like it would make a person kind of shitty, you know? So I'd say you have to open your mind up and have empathy for what other people are dealing with. And the letter of the law is not always going to be the final word in what's moral and what's just. Anyway, you noticed something.
So oh, so I'm trying to find the number of green cards. Okay, so number of applicants on waiting lists and family-sponsored preference categories as of November 2015 as of and versus as of November 1st, 2016. So we're going to talk about actual – this is just visas. This is just people being able to come into the country.
So like, we're not talking about MasterCard or Discover or no. any of that.
So there is currently – this is the preferred people. And this is like I'm going to imagine immigrant visa applicants and family-sponsored and employment-based preferences registered at the National Visa Center as of November 1st, 2016. As of November 1st, 2016, there is 4.25 million people in the country under visas.
Mm-hmm.
And only 107,000 of those are in as work visas. And the immigrant waiting list by country. Here we go. This is what I was looking for.
Mm-hmm.
Mexico, 1.3 million people on the list.
Jesus.
The Philippines, 387,000. India, 331. Vietnam, 266. China, mainland-born, 252,000. Dominican Republic, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Worldwide total, 4.3 million people wanting
wow.
to immigrate to the U.S. on waiting lists. And of the family first preference numerical limitation, the worldwide family first preference numerical limitation is 23,400 people total.
Jeez, yeah.
The people on the list that are that fit this criteria is 107,000. For Mexico alone.
Wow.
So, like, people are like, oh, well, what about following all the legal channels? We're talking numbers here, folks. They're letting in 23,000 people a year and a wait list just for Mexico. Like, and that's global. And the wait list for Mexico is 1.3 million.
So let me talk about how backed up the United States Office of Citizenship and Immigration is. So I am here legally. I have a green card. I have a green card from an era when green cards did not expire. So I don't have to worry about that. But part of me was worried that with a crazy anti-immigrant administration, like I should have a green card where the photograph on it looks a little more current. Because the photo on my green card is of me as an 8-year-old. So right after the election last year, November 9th, I put in the paperwork online to have an updated green card. In January of this year, I went and I had my photograph taken, my fingerprints scanned into the system, and all that. So as of actually, it was Inauguration Day. I specifically remember that. Because I was in, an official government building, and all the government buildings have the official portrait of the president on the wall. And it was January 20th, and they still had Barack Obama photo on there, because probably the official portrait of the new president had not been
distributed
lined
yet.
Up and distributed to government offices yet. And, I felt kind of good. I was like, oh, thank God I don't have to stand in this long-ass line looking at Trump. So that was in January, right? So at this point, they have all my name and stuff, my photograph and my biometrics. Literally, all they have to do is print my new green card and mail it to me. Guess who has not gotten his new green card yet? So I started this process November 9th. This is September 21st, 2017. So in a couple more months, it'll be a year. And this is not a first-time thing. It's not like a major background check or anything like that. It's literally a renewal. It's like having your driver's license renewed. We're going on a year. And I've checked because I've been paranoid. And I checked their website, and I'm like, oh, God, did they forget me? It's like, no, there's this whole site that says, if you're in this group of people, this is the time frame that we're working in. The last time I checked, they were still working on, July of last year.
Mm.
So when I look and they're, up near November, then I'll know they'll be getting around to me soon. But it isn't just people that are here legally that are renewing their cards, and they're that backed up.
Now going into the family-sponsored immigration list, mm-hmm. like and this, I'm sure you did not expect this level of numbers, but guess what? The top 10 countries with the highest number of family-sponsored waiting list registries listed below. Together, these represent 74.8% of the total. This list includes all countries with at least 106,000 persons on the waiting list. The per-country limit in the sets an annual maximum of the amount of family visas which may be issued to applicants from any one country. The fiscal year 2017 per-country limit is 15,820. Family-sponsored preference on the waiting list. Mexico, 1.3 million. Then Philippines, 362,000. India, 299, yada, yada, yada. All others. So there is almost as many other people. There's 1.07 million people on the from the rest of the world that are not included in the top 10, while Mexico has 1.3.
Wow.
So we're looking at a crisis, not of like, oh, gee, there's so much illegal immigration. It's like our immigration system is super fucked.
Yeah. And part of the big part of the problem is that the immigration system, I mean, it's a government organization. It's a government operation. It has to be. But, you know, Congress is very loath to fund shit like that. Funding immigration and funding the IRS are really low on Congress's priorities. So, of course, all these systems are backed up because they're not getting the money they need to hire the people and upgrade their technology.
Who can look at a wait list 1.3 million long and think, you know, 15,000? Like, oh, but these immigrants are going to flood our borders. Well, I'd rather they do it through legal means, honestly. Like, let them come in. And yes, I would like them to – it would be better if they were in and legal and makes it all good so you don't have ICE coming in and kidnapping the parents while their mm-hmm. kid is going in for an ICU visit, which yeah. happened in, like San Antonio
yeah.
today.
Eesh. And that's just – I mean, where's your fucking conscience in that case, you know? Where's your humanity?
And if you work for ICE, you sure as fuck don't have any. And, like, I can totally understand if you're, like, a violent gang member. If you commit crimes and you're an immigrant, all right, that's one thing. But people here trying to just live a fucking life and not get beheaded in the street by a drug gang, it's a bit different.
And the undocumented immigrants tend to be more law-abiding.
Yeah, because they know that if they get caught, their ass is out.
Yeah.
And so, basically,
we talked about that last week, too.
Super discussed this topic.
Yeah. You know, we have 350, 360 million people in this country. We got a fuckload of space. We could just let people in and it wouldn't be a fucking issue.
Yeah.
You know, it's not going to destroy the country. It's not going to overpopulate the country.
We got plenty of space. There's lots of fucking nothing in Nebraska.
And if we didn't have our heads up our asses with healthcare and taxes and everything else, we could solve the fucking problem. Yeah. I read this statistic the other day that like the amount of money that they've spent on war is like a couple of million more than what it would cost to wipe out all of the student loan debt.
Yep. Or, you know, hey, universal healthcare would cost X per year. And we're just like, yeah, the government just said that they'd pay at least three times that to the fucking military or something like that. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, we'll spend the money.
$700 billion to the military because we have some Koreans to bomb, apparently.
Christ. I called out a dude the other day also for that kind of shit because they were like, oh, and someone was like, yo, this idiot's going to get millions of people killed.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, it's just North Koreans. And I'm like, you know, hey, if a country's citizens deserve to die because of shitheaded leadership, I got some bad news about the U.S.
Yeah, no kidding.
And then it's like it's this astounding level of lack of compassion.
Yeah, yeah.
And thinking of other people as people.
Yeah.
Like the there's fucking North Koreans didn't ask for this shit.
There's some just poor random citizens of North Korea out there minding their own business, trying to get through life, and their leader threatens to nuke their neighbor. And if the U.S. decides to swing its big military dick and ends up fucking frying their whole country, it's like they're just minding their own business, going about their day. And their leadership made a shitty decision, and now they're toast.
And then you don't even count all the South Koreans, the Chinese, the Japanese people.
Because it's Russians. It's not like shit like air and wind movement and nuclear fallout really follow map borders.
Yeah.
You know? It's not like that shit is not going to fuck the entire region.
You know, you can't just paint can fill that shit with fire. It doesn't work.
I mean, Japan was only different because it's an island.
Yeah.
But if you bomb North Korea, it's surrounded by other countries.
Yeah, you're going to fuck up sections of Far East Russia. You got China that's going to be really mad. Yeah. South Korea is going to get hit with every bit of retaliatory strikes.
Yeah.
You know.
And South Korea's
I know people
capital.
In South Korea. Let's not.
Well, South Korea's capital and largest city is, like, really close to the border with North Korea. So, city of X million people, it's sort of like, yeah, they're going to have some radioactive air for a bit, you know?
A while, you know, because especially considering modern nuclear weapons are hideously more powerful than they were when we dropped them. Like, even if it's some shitty-ass nuke, they're constructed differently nowadays. Like, we have never seen a conventional modern nuke used. They've been tested, and they've been dick-waved around. But the bombs that were dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki are not nearly what we have in modern times.
Well, in even modern times, quote unquote, because I mean, I don't think we've built any since
probably 70s or 80s.
Yeah.
Then, of course, that also means we have shit ancient fucking nukes floating around and the people that maintain them aging out. I think we discussed this in person the other day, Fuzz.
Yeah. How there's a real brain drain issue in the nuclear industry because, like, we haven't even built a nuclear power plant since the 80s.
Yeah.
So, like, maintaining systems and, like, hey, how do we safely dismantle or fire a nuclear weapon? Like, well, there's one guy that knows, and he's 78. He has dementia, but if we catch him on a good day, he might tell us which wire to cut, you know? I mean, anyway, I'm rambling.
Yeah. At this point. We have, like, super answered this person's question, I think. And there was one more email at the top, I thought.
Oh, I just filed that. That was one that was like a couple weeks old. It was about the Lee Park thing.
Oh, okay.
Where we didn't read it with Jacoby, but we discussed it in sort of broad strokes, I think.
And after this, we had a minor issue where things started getting weirdly truncated, so you only missed, like, 30 seconds of us discussing nuclear power stations in Texas. In any event, this wraps up this episode. If you like the show and would like to support us, we have a Patreon, patreon.com/notcast. You can find me, Saverin, on Twitter, @SaverinDrake. You can find Fuzz, @FuzzWolf, and find out the rest of his stuff at FuzzWolf.com. We're going to wrap this up now, and we'll see you guys next week. Good night, and big balls.